Hi, I'm Jane O'Reilly, and this is Ageless. I'm 40, and my life is just getting started. I'm here to share real talk and real experiences about how to live life ageless. Nothing's off the table. You know the vibes. Let's go. Welcome back to Ageless. I'm Jane O'Reilly, and today I am joined again by Dr. Greg Hammer, former professor at Stanford University School of Medicine, pediatric intensive care physician, pediatric anesthesiologist, mindfulness expert, and best-selling author of Gain Without Pain, the Happiness Handbook for Healthcare Professionals. Dr. Hammer's clinical focus is in pediatric cardiac anesthesia and pediatric critical care medicine. His research is in developmental pharmacology and immunology, and he has an active laboratory with multiple ongoing studies in these areas. Dr. Hammer is a health enthusiast and meditator, utilizing a non-duality and mindfulness-based approach, including his GAIN method. So welcome back to the show, Dr. Greg Hammer. Last year when you joined us, you were a professor at Stanford University School of Medicine, and I hear you've just retired.
Yes, Janet, great to be with you. I retired at the end of December from that career. Now I'm working on my second career.
What is your second career?
My second career is really all about wellness, teaching wellness. So I'm still a teacher, plan on upgrading my website and social media, which I've resisted up until now. And, you know, possibly developing an online course. It'll be all about physical and spiritual wellness. And, you know, we'll see what happens. I'm certainly not hanging up my spikes altogether. That's for sure.
Okay. I definitely, it's the teaching is in your DNA. And I don't know if you remember this, but when you were on the show last time, you walked us through a meditation. And it was honestly one of my favorite podcasts that I've ever done, because it was so meaningful and I was so elevated after the meditation. It's just in you. So I'm really happy to hear that you're going to be doing the online courses, because people need more of you.
Well, that's kind of you to say, Jane. Thank you very much.
Yes, of course. So you're also a best-selling author.
Well, yeah, my first book, Gain Without Pain, did quite well. And led to my getting a publicist and a book agent. So now I'm writing a book about mindfulness for those who care for teenagers. It's called, so far called A Mindful Teen. I have a book agent who is farming out five chapters and the book materials, and we'll see. The publisher may want to change the name, but I hope not.
Well, I think that you're just right there with the right kind of book, and there's going to be a lot of people out there that need that book too. So congratulations on that project.
Yes.
And today we're here to discuss cortisol and stress and get your expertise on how to balance your body's cortisol levels to combat the symptoms of chronic stress, burnout, and fatigue. So where do you want to start with that?
Well, I think that stress is a big topic. And we can talk about the acute stress response and chronic stress. And my definition of resilience is the ability to neutralize the acute stress response when it is no longer adaptive, so that it does not become chronic stress. And so cortisol is part of the acute stress response. So we could talk about what happens to the cortisol in your bloodstream when you're acutely stressed, and what the benefits are of that response, including elevations in serum cortisol, but what the adverse consequences of chronic elevation of cortisol is. So that is part of chronic stress, which ages us. We have some objective markers, biomarkers of aging, if you will, and elevated cortisol promotes aging and the diseases associated with aging, including cardiovascular disease, dementia, cancer, and metabolic syndrome, which is obesity and type 2 diabetes. So, you know, maybe we could start the conversation with acute stress and what that acute stress response is and why it evolved.
I love that. So my day job is in retail. So I'm a brand leader for a company called All Saints. It's a global British brand, clothing brand. And I love my job, but there's
I mean, in retail, you're always on to the next thing. There's always something to do. We're dealing with people on every kind of level, and just the day-to-day, the day-to-day projects that need to go down. And I have found myself with elevated stress and burnout many times, especially after Black Friday and the holiday season. I mean, at the end of that, I was like, I need a vacation. I need a break. But I felt physically affected, and I felt this burnout that I haven't felt in a while. And so I couldn't wait to jump on this podcast and get your input on that. Is just, how do we combat stuff like that? I mean, I feel like it's more than just taking a vacation.
Oh, absolutely. I think we need real intention. We talked about my first book, Gain Without Pain. GAIN is an acronym for what I think are the four pillars of mental and spiritual wellness, and they are gratitude, acceptance, intention, and non-judgment. And the I for intention means we have to have a plan. We have to have a practice, ideally a daily practice. And, you know, you and I sort of went through that last time with a brief GAIN meditation. We can have a brief practice using the elements of GAIN or simply gratitude, but we need to rewire our brains. And we fortunately can do that because of this wonderful quality our brains have called neuroplasticity. Mm-hmm. We are wired in ways that are not always adaptive for our health. So, for example, the acute stress response involves a sudden elevation of adrenaline and cortisol in our blood. And that is an adaptive response when we're faced with an actual threat. So, you know, the sort of stereotypical example is we're running away from a predator, and we benefit from the adrenaline because it actually increases the amount of blood that our heart is pumping. Our heart rate goes up. The contractile force of the heart with each beat goes up. And adrenaline also elevates our blood sugar to some extent. And that's good because it increases the glucose that's delivered to our muscles by that extra blood flow that our heart is producing. Cortisol is also part of the acute stress response, and it further elevates our blood sugar, again, so that our heart can pump more energy substrate to our muscles so that we can run or stay and fight. So that is a response, a process, or set of processes that evolved over millennia. And, you know, it helped us run away from predators or stay and fight a foe. And it's sometimes adaptive now when there's a real acute stress situation. Like, for example, we're at a party, there's a pool, there's kids, we hear a splash, we turn toward the pool, and there's a toddler missing because the toddler's in the pool. That acute stress response will ready us to perhaps jump in the pool and rescue the toddler. So that is an adaptive example. However, most of the time, unfortunately, the acute stress response is provoked simply by our thoughts, and that's not adaptive. So we think of something stressful, as you can relate with your job, and I think everyone experiences this with their work. Something sudden comes up, or you know, there's a crisis at work, and this acute stress response is triggered, and we can feel our heart rate go up, probably sense that our blood pressure is going up. We may get a little anxious, a little sweaty, our blood sugar's going up. So this is not adaptive because we really are not in a situation where we need those physiologic responses, those acute stress responses.
So how do we combat those thoughts that are creating those stressful experiences?
Well, you know, that's a good question. Our thoughts are our thoughts. So we can't really combat the thoughts. We can begin to rewire our brain so that we bring those responses back down to neutral, back down to baseline quickly. So it's okay to be frightened and have a surge of adrenaline and cortisol, or, you know, it's okay to even have the acute stress response triggered by our thoughts, as long as we can bring the cortisol and adrenaline levels back down to baseline quickly, because when they're chronically elevated, i.e. we don't bring them back down to baseline, they have a lot of ill effects. So how do we neutralize the acute stress response? You know, we focus on our breath. We do a quick GAIN meditation. You know, we can do that with our eyes open when we're in the store or in our office or walking down the sidewalk or walking down the hallway to meet with our boss. And we recognize that we're getting this response. So it's a matter of rewiring our brain so that instead of having this acute stress stimulus propagated, so maybe it just gets worse and worse and worse, we think of more and more negative thoughts and more stressful thoughts, we're able to take a deep breath, maybe just focus on our breath and deepen it and slow it. Slowing and deepening the breath, maybe inhaling to a count of three, pausing to a count of three, and slowly exhaling to a count of four, actually activates the vagus nerve in our parasympathetic nervous system. And that is the opposite of what happens in the acute stress response. Our sympathetic nervous system, that fight or flight response, is activated. Slow, deep breathing activates the opposite part of our autonomic nervous system and slows our heart rate and lowers our blood pressure and lowers our blood sugar. And so we can learn to invoke that parasympathetic response to neutralize the acute stress or sympathetic response. So this is something that we can learn to do with simple measures, such as just focusing on our breath.
It's so simple. And when I'm in fight or flight mode and I have like my cortisol levels probably skyrocketing, the last thing I'm thinking of is let me just sit here and breathe. Like that's not my first go-to. So it's really just the retraining of the brain, I think, to neutralize, like you were saying, and bring it down to the baseline level. So too much cortisol really is bad for our health. It can create so many different complications, right?
Yeah. So when it's acutely elevated and we are able to neutralize it quickly, that's fine. But when we can't, when we lack that resilience required to neutralize the acute stress response, our cortisol remains elevated. What happens? Well, we certainly don't want our blood sugar elevated over a long period of time. Again, it may be adaptive in the acute situation when we have to run or fight or jump in the pool, but we don't want it elevated chronically. When it's elevated over a long period of time, when we don't neutralize that acute stress response, that elevation in cortisol causes a chronic elevation in blood sugar. And that is bad. It actually leads ultimately to prolonged elevation of our blood sugar and resistance of our tissues to the elevated blood sugar. So our tissues don't take up the glucose normally over prolonged periods of time. That stimulates our pancreatic islet cells to produce more insulin. And yet the insulin doesn't bring the blood sugar down because our tissues are not taking up the blood sugar. So we have this situation where both our insulin and our glucose are elevated, which is not normal. And the effects of chronic elevations in our blood sugar lead to type 2 diabetes. That's really the definition of type 2 diabetes. And that leads to all the complications of type 1 and type 2 diabetes. Type 1 is the diminution or relative absence of insulin. Type 2 is that situation I described where we have too much insulin, but also too much blood sugar. And both of them lead to changes in our blood vessels, like hardening of the arteries. And this sort of choking off of our small blood vessels has complications with our vision because the blood vessels in the retina are constricted and inadequate. Same thing with our skin and our muscles. We see people with chronic diabetes getting sores that don't heal. Maybe they get some friction on a foot from their shoe and it forms a kind of ulcer that doesn't heal. You know, eventually they start to get lots of other organ injury. And also cortisol, beside elevating our blood sugar, suppresses our immune system. Hmm. So this is why chronic elevations of cortisol lead to a risk of developing cancer because our immune system is suppressed. Also serious infection and elevations in cortisol, whether it's from our own body or particularly if we're taking a cortisol-like drug exogenously because we have some chronic inflammatory process like rheumatoid arthritis or lupus, we see changes in the face, the so-called moon facies, increased fat in the upper part of the back, wasting of muscles, which is also part of this metabolic syndrome. And we know how important muscle mass is, especially as we age. So, so many complications of chronic elevation of cortisol.
Yeah, that, I mean, my brain first went to diabetes and I thought, you know, that it probably spikes that, but I didn't know how. And then I just always wonder if our blood sugar is raised in those moments of high cortisol level. Why would I always crave sugar or caffeine though. And I just wonder why my body's craving that if my blood sugar is already up.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I'm not an expert in food cravings, but I don't know. When I'm, you know, one thing is that if you're chronically stressed, you get fatigued for a number of reasons. So what is burnout? The simple definition of burnout is physical and mental exhaustion related to chronic stress. So when you have a chronic elevation in adrenaline and cortisol, you don't sleep well. You get very fatigued because you're not sleeping well. There's nothing like, I can tell you from being on call and being up all night and walking past a nursing station where some kind family has given a box of See's candy to those of us who work on that unit, and I'm walking past it and I've been up most of the night. Nothing hits the spot like that very sugary chocolate in the See's candy. Unfortunately, that boost is brief, and then, you know, we kind of crash, and then we're too tired to exercise, so we're not sleeping well, we're not necessarily eating well, we're indulging in sugary, fatty, so-called comfort foods when we're fatigued, and then we're not often exercising because we're too tired to exercise, and that's kind of a self-propagating situation with fatigue, dietary deterioration, let's say, and lack of exercise. So yeah, during that process of chronic stress, of course, you know, sugar and caffeine too. We crave caffeine when we're exhausted. So maybe not during the acute stress phase, but when that acute stress becomes chronic, naturally, caffeine and sugar seem like they are our friends, but of course, they're not really our friends.
They're our temporary friends.
Very temporary. They're very fickle. They support us for a short period of time, and then they abandon us and we crash.
We crash. Or then we want more. I know for me, when I'm exhausted and I'm so drained, I have no willpower. I mean, everything's on the table. And for me, it's Ben and Jerry's pint of Netflix and chill is what it's called. Oh my God, it's so good. And then I just feel awful afterwards. So it's just, it's not a healthy place to be at all. And that's why I was really looking forward to this podcast, because I know I'm not alone in fatigue and burnout and cortisol levels. And I know I've heard of cortisol so many times, but I really wanted to dig into it with you because it does lead to long-term health issues, and it could put it like terminal. So to live with the chronic stress is just could kill you.
Well, it can literally kill you because, as you know, we kind of touched on, it leads to cardiovascular disease, these changes in our arteries and ultimately our heart. Cortisol also causes high blood pressure. So chronic hypertension causes injury to our kidneys and other organs. So cardiovascular disease, which is a killer. Type 2 diabetes, which is a killer, as we've kind of touched on. Mm-hmm. Dementia, you know, neurodegenerative disease, in part caused by those vascular changes that choke off blood supply to our essential organs, including our brain. And that is a risk factor for dementia for sure. And the fourth one is cancer. So cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, dementia, and cancer are really the four diseases of aging. In fact, many people are now considering aging as a disease itself that can be cured. And, you know, there are a variety of approaches to curing the disease called aging, and those four sort of four horsemen of aging. And they all involve you know, physical approaches, sleep, exercise, nutrition, supplements, even drugs, and also mental and I would say spiritual approaches, because again, what we've been talking about, that resilience can be physical, but resilience is also a mental response to an adverse acute set of physiologic changes like acute stress. We figure out, oh, this is not good for me. This is not adaptive. I don't need to be having elevation in adrenaline and cortisol. How can I bring those back down to baseline quickly? That's resilience, in one of its forms at least. So fortunately, you know, this is something that we can learn through practice and mitigate or prevent the development of all four of those diseases of aging.
You know, I really wanted to walk back your four pillars of your GAIN method, because I really loved that conversation last time you were here with us. Do you mind walking us through that?
I don't mind at all. So this is, you know, the GAIN approach is really a daily practice. As we've discussed, we get up in the morning, we open the blinds, we get some blue light that activates our circadian rhythm to help us wake up. Hopefully there's blue light out there, but if there's not, at least we look outside, which is always reassuring, still there. Then we do our morning hygiene, and then we find a comfortable place to sit, and we close our eyes. And as I said, we first focus on the breath. So slowly in, perhaps to a count of three through the nose, pausing to a count of three, and then without effort, just relaxing and letting the breath go to a count of four. And we just do several cycles of this where we're just focused on the breath. And again, as I said, we're activating the parasympathetic nervous system through activity of the vagus nerve. And this is slowing our heart rate. You know, it's interesting. I occasionally will wear a continuous glucose monitor. It's just a little patch that gets deployed in the back of my arm with a little applicator. And then it pairs with an app on the phone. And you can monitor your blood sugar. It's interesting that if I check it during that 2-week period that the monitor is on, before I get out of bed, I, you know, that's reflective of my fasting blood sugar. It's usually around 90 or so, which is below 100 is good. Mm-hmm. I notice that just getting out of bed actually bumps the blood sugar. And why does it do that? It's because when you get up, when you get out of bed and you start walking around, you get a little bit of adrenaline. You're nice and calm in bed. And then just waking up, I think the physical movement, but also your thoughts kind of kick in. Your adrenaline level bumps up a little bit. Probably your cortisol is bumping a little bit and your blood sugar is going up. You can see this if you're monitoring it. So here we are sitting and breathing deeply, and our blood sugar is actually going down. I've noticed that just starting this slow, deliberate breathing method, activating the parasympathetic nervous system, I notice if I'm watching it on my phone briefly, just so I can learn, that my blood sugar is actually decreasing just by sitting and breathing deeply. And then we go through a, you know, 30 to 45 second contemplation of each of the GAIN elements. Gratitude, of course, as we're deeply and slowly breathing, we link that breath to thoughts of gratitude. You know, I'm grateful for my health, that I was able to get out of bed this morning and go pee, and, you know, my kidneys are working and my heart's going around and blood's going around, rather. My heart is healthy. So I'm grateful for my health. I'm grateful for having a comfortable, safe place to live, unlike many other people in the world. I'm grateful for my friends, my family, my community, my work, my dogs.
Course.
We sort of sink into this gratitude and link it to our breath. And then we transition to, while breathing slowly and deeply, that which we are uncomfortable with, or maybe a painful experience that we cannot correct, we cannot change. And we focus on accepting it, on bringing this uncomfortable experience or painful experience into our body. We open our chest, we open our heart, we bring this experience into our heart. And we just sit with it. We abide. We are focusing on our breath at the same time as we relax our body and sort of nurture this uncomfortable experience. And we learn to live with it. We learn to be okay with it. And again, we link it to our breath. And then we transition to the I in GAIN, which is intention. And one of our intentions might be that we want to be more present, aware of the present moment, which is really part of mindfulness and happiness, being in the present moment. So we, as we breathe deeply and slowly, focus on our present experience, the pressure of the chair against our body, the slightly sweet smell of the air that we're breathing, the sensation of our chest and abdomen expanding as we inhale. Maybe we hear the sound of an automobile or an airplane going by in the distance, and we focus on that. And again, we link this to our slow, deliberate, deep breath. And then we transition to the end and gain, which is non-judgment. We want to learn to rewire our brains to drop the judgments, because when we're judging, we're not seeing things as they truly are. And we have a negativity bias. We tend to be negative and hold on to the negative and forget the positive. So our judgments are often negative. We judge the world negatively. We judge others negatively. And mostly we judge ourselves negatively. And so we, as we slowly and deeply breathe, we maybe picture an image of the Earth apparently suspended in space, one of these beautiful NASA images. And we recognize that the Earth is just a planet. It's neither good nor bad. There is no judgment. Things don't have to be good or bad. And the Earth is neither good nor bad. And it's only logical for me to think that I too am neither good nor bad. I'm just a human being. I'm just the person that I am. And we link this neither good nor bad I am to our breath. And we just sit with our deep, slow breath and this amness, I amness. And then we just transition back to pure focus on the breath, and we slowly open our eyes and we're ready to go out in the world. And what happens with this practice is that when we feel acutely stressed, a light bulb goes off and we go to the breath. We activate the vagus nerve in our parasympathetic nervous system. And when we focus on our breath, these gain elements come back to us because we've linked our gratitude, acceptance, intention, and non-judgment to this slow, deep, deliberate breathing and activating our parasympathetic nervous system and recovering from this acute stress response. So, and then when we're being ungrateful or resisting rather than accepting, or our intention and purpose and plan go out the window and we're cogitating on the past and the future in maladaptive ways, or when we're being overly judgmental, a light bulb goes off because we're training our brain to recognize these responses. And we can have a little laugh to ourselves and, you know, I'm being ungrateful. Ha ha. You know, look at everything I have in my life compared to, say, those in Gaza or Ukraine or in so many other places in the world where there's conflict and tragedy. Look at what I have. Look at my circumstances. So a light bulb goes off when we're feeling sorry for ourselves or being ungrateful or being resisting or unintentional or judgmental. And we get a little hit of dopamine. We laugh at ourselves for being human. And we get a little hit of dopamine instead of a little hit of adrenaline and cortisol. And that's really what resilience is all about.
That is the pro tip right there. Many, you've dropped so many pro tips. And it's just been such a delight to have you back on the show, Dr. Greg Hammer. I have so appreciated this. You've added so much value to this podcast. And I just want to leave it right there with the GAIN method. And I'm going to re-listen to this podcast, take good notes, because I have a morning ritual that I do every day where I bring in spirituality. I sometimes bring in meditation work, journal writing, gratitude writing. And I notice that on days that I am in gratitude, I have a better day. And you're right, it is associated with the dopamine hit and not the cortisol hit. So I'm going to remember this conversation next time I go to a negative place and just laugh to myself instead of go all the way with it and be negative. Just laugh to myself and restart and practice that GAIN method. So thank you so much for being here and for everything you've added to this show.
It's really my pleasure, Jaina, and I'd be happy to join you anytime.
I love it. I'll think of something for the next time you're here, because you are so bright and brilliant and you're a wealth of information. So I'm sure that there's a great topic out there for us for next time.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you, Dana. Take good care of yourself, as I know you are doing.
Oh, thank you. You as well.
Thank you for joining me for another episode of Ageless. Don't forget to rate and subscribe. Tune in next week for a new episode.